The Deadbolt Mystery Society presents The Warwick Recordings, a story about secrets and how they are uncovered in a strange neighborhood in an even stranger town.
Hello again. Knox Carter back with another installment in this weird story about my life and what happened when I moved to Warwick Court. The batteries in my recorder are fresh, and I can tell you some more of my story. Consider this Warwick recording number 3. And trust me, you'll want to hear what comes next. I'm picking up where we left off, at the end of the first day of my new home in Warwick Court. If you listened to my earlier recording, you know that I recently moved into a new house in a new neighborhood after getting divorced. You know that the house is a death trap, and that during the renovations, I found a set of strange rules written behind one of the walls. One of those rules mentioned someone or something called the Owl King. At the time, I had no idea what this referred to. I did a little bit of research after finding the rules, but didn't turn up anything useful. I have to admit that the phrase rattled me a little, and that's saying something. Because of the subject matter that I write about, I don't spook easily. What did it mean? What did any of it mean? In case you've forgotten the rules I mentioned, here they are again. 1. The owner of this house is always considered the target. 2. Assume you are always being watched. 3. You are now the prey. 4. They will try to kill you. 5. Suspect everyone. 6. Do some research on Stone Gardner. 7. The Owl King is coming. After discovering the secret behind the wall, I read those statements again in an attempt to figure out what they might mean. Surely they were a joke of some sort or the ramblings of a crazy person. Given my newfound stance on secrets, the fact that my home seemed to harbor its own secret wasn't something I was thrilled with. My wife's secret had caused my life to disintegrate. Would my home's secret cause something similar to happen? I didn't want any more surprises. Ultimately, I knew I was letting my writer's imagination create a story that was too fantastic to possibly be true. The rules were crazy and were likely the work of squatters who had taken up residence in the foreclosed home at some point. Or perhaps the previous owner had been a drug addict who had been huffing pain or doing LSD. Was I really a target? Unlikely. I'd just moved in. Why would I possibly be a target? I didn't know anyone. I certainly hadn't had time to make any enemies yet. Nobody at Warwick Court had any reason to want me dead. The paranoid part of my brain took the threat more seriously than it should, and I couldn't help feeling a little scared. However, the suspense writer part of my brain took the discovery as the perfect plot point for the novel I planned to write about a house with a strange secret. The fact that I'm recording my account of all this now to be used in some unknown capacity makes the whole thing seem more than a little meta. Strange how art imitates life imitates art. Not really knowing what else to do about the discovery, I took some photos of the rules with my phone and I threw a painter's tarp over all of it. Even though I knew it was a bunch of nonsense, I didn't want to continually look at it. After another day or two of hard work, it would be covered up by new sheetrock and a fresh coat of paint anyway. I was exhausted at this point and decided to settle in for the night. It had been a long day, it had been a long week, a long month too, for that matter. My life was in flux, and I still hadn't adjusted fully to being alone all the time. I knew single people who thrived in their solitude and enjoyed having complete freedom. I wasn't there yet. Part of me wanted to dive right into the novel idea that was swirling around in my head, but another part of me just wanted to pop my pills like I did every night and sleep for about 24 hours straight. I eventually settled for downing a couple beers and a melatonin and hoped for a solid 8 hours of uninterrupted slumber. If Dr. Jordan is listening to any of this, I know she won't approve of the way I handle things, but she isn't here. So I'll just do what I think is best. And that's what I did at the end of the night, too. And what I thought was best. I didn't bother making the bed or what passed for one at this point. I simply unpacked the new blanket I bought, ripped off the plastic from the new mattress, unbagged the new pillow, and closed my eyes. It took a while for the voices in my head to stop whispering to me, but eventually they grew tired and went to sleep. They were just as exhausted as I was. Eventually, I allowed myself to drift away into the strange world of dreams. The dream I had was a vivid one. In it, I was carrying a gleaming knife and chasing a young woman down a dark alley bathed in moonlight. I remember her screams. And for a moment, I wondered if I was reliving a scene from one of my books, or if I was actually chasing a woman with the intent of cutting her open. I was a slave to my subconscious and powerless to do anything else but go along with the dream. I pursued her at a faster rate. The girl called out for help, but no one answered her. I couldn't help noticing that she bore a remarkable resemblance to my ex-wife. Eventually, the girl turned down a blind alley and found herself at a dead end. She wept openly and begged me not to kill her. I advanced on her and raised the knife. Just as I was about to plunge the blade deep into her tender flesh, something startled me awake. At first, I wasn't sure what the sound was that woke me up. I lay there completely still on my bed, listening, frozen, waiting for the sound to repeat itself. After what seemed like a minute or two, but was probably only a few seconds, I heard the sound again. It was the creaking of stairs. My heart thudded loudly in my chest. My bedroom was on the second floor, and the stairs, although old, were still in basically good condition, even though they were noisy and would likely need some maintenance in the near future. Thankfully, I hadn't gotten around to that yet. The creaking steps were what alerted me to the fact that someone was in my house. My mind immediately raced back to the fourth rule. They will try to kill you. Then, I remembered the last statement. The Owl King is coming. I had no idea what that meant, but my mind conjured a vision of a hulking, all-seeing, winged creature ascending towards me with the body of a man and an owl's face. In my mind, I could see the hands that ended, not in fingers, but with talons, as sharp as knives. They were stained with the blood of a fresh kill. The Owl King flexed his hands, eager to sink those talons into my gut and pull out all the things that kept me alive. My heart thudded. At the thought, I jumped up from my bed, suddenly alert and ready to fight. I was still on an adrenaline high from the dream. I listened closely until I heard the sound again. It was closer this time. Did the Owl King approach? I cursed, wishing I had taken the time to completely empty the contents of my trunk. I had things in there that I could use to defend myself, but I'd reasoned that I could get all that stuff out later. Besides, I had no reason to anticipate the events that had happened so far. Looking around, I spotted the claw hammer lying on the floor that I'd used to tear out most of the busted sheetrock earlier in the evening. I picked it up. It felt formidable in my hands. The hammer had the power to end a life if required, and I knew there was a chance I'd have to test this soon. I held my breath and waited. After a minute, I second-guessed the possibility of there being an actual intruder in my home. Then, I heard the creak of another board. Whoever was coming up the stairs wasn't moving very fast. By the time they reached the top of the stairs, I could have written an entire poem. For a moment, I considered calling out to whoever had invaded my space to warn them to leave while they still could. Part of me decided that wouldn't be the best thing to do. I needed to see who this was and subdue them long enough to ask why they thought it was a good idea to break into my home. There was something irregular about the sounds progressing up the steps. It was like whoever was coming up wasn't actually accustomed to climbing them. The movements were slow and haphazard. For a moment, I conjured a vision in my head of a creature of some sort that didn't approach on legs, but rather crawled on ragged appendages. It was a stupid thought brought on by too many horror novels and scary movies. Maybe some sort of nasty creature of the dark had claimed a new victim and taken its legs, and was using those legs to climb these steps. I imagined some bloodthirsty creature that was mostly tentacles and teeth, manipulating a pair of severed legs to propel itself up the rickety staircase. I gripped the hammer tighter. Why couldn't I have kept thinking about the Owl King instead? As the person or thing approached, I gripped the hammer tighter and prepared myself for a fight. The footsteps were closer now. They made it sound like whoever was approaching was just outside my bedroom door. I braced myself for the inevitable confrontation. I heard a thud of some sort just on the other side of the door. The footsteps then quickly began to retreat. The cadence of the steps were still irregular, but this time they were moving faster, as if trying to escape detection. With my heart hammering in my chest, I flung the bedroom door open and raced out into the hallway. I managed to catch sight of a hooded figure dressed all in black retreating. The way they were running made me think they had a limp of some sort. I shouted and gave chase, but they had a decent head start on me. I took the stairs as fast as I dared, making sure not to tumble headfirst down them. I rounded the corner leading into the living room, but the intruder was gone. I knew for a fact that the front door hadn't been thrown open or slammed, yet it was closed. On closer inspection, I found that it was also locked, which could only be done from the inside. I had locked it, of course, before turning in for the night, so where had the intruder gone? How had he or she gotten into my house to begin with? It was almost as if the person had appeared from thin air and then also vanished into such. Of course, such an idea was preposterous, but I had no other explanation for where they might have gone. It was like they had emerged from the ether and then just gone up in smoke. There was a time during my stay at Saturn Hills where I had seen and heard people that weren't there. But this wasn't like that, though. Was it? The footprints in the dust proved that I hadn't slipped back into my old habits. Someone had been in my house and then disappeared like a ghost. Suddenly, the hammer seemed like a pitiful excuse for a weapon in my hands. What use would something like that be against someone who could appear and vanish at will? I made a thorough check of the downstairs, opening every closet door, looking in every nook and cranny, searching throughout the house in case there was some sort of hiding place I might have missed, but I came up empty-handed, which was just as confusing as it was frightening. Where had the intruder gone? After I was satisfied that there was no possible way anyone was hiding on the ground floor of my home, I trudged back up to my bedroom. My nerves were on edge, and I was exhausted now that the adrenaline surge had worn off. The stairs creaked and groaned just as I expected them to, just as they had when someone else had climbed them. Everything was the same, except for one thing. There, in front of the doorway leading into my bedroom, was a small gift box with a shiny red bow. No doubt the intruder had left this for me before fleeing. This must have been the thump I heard before the intruder headed back down the stairs. In my haste to catch the person who had broken into my home, I had overlooked it. And yet, there it was. Yellow wrapping paper, red bow. The suspense writer part of my brain was reeling from this development. I had planned on writing a new novel about a mysterious house and the secrets it might hold, but it seems that my life was busy scripting the plot for me. All I had to do was serve as a note taker. Although the small box looked like a gift of some sort, I had trouble envisioning it as something innocent or innocuous. Intruders don't break in and leave something harmless. For a moment, I considered calling the police, then thought better of it. No matter what was inside the box, I couldn't resort to that. It would raise too many questions. I needed to handle this on my own, sort things out for myself. Besides, these people didn't know who I was. They didn't know who they were dealing with. Knox Carter, creator of Written Nightmares. Knox Carter, newly divorced man with nothing to lose. Knox Carter, expert on secrets. Whoever was playing around with me would regret it. I would make certain of it. I carefully lifted the gift box off the dusty floor and sat it on a small, dirty table left by the previous owners. I was going to have to call and have a dumpster park on the curb so I could clean all the junk out of the rooms, but for tonight, however, I was grateful for something to sit the box on while I studied it. It looked innocent enough, harmless in its own way, but foxglove also looks harmless until you ingest a bit of it and you die from its toxins. One can't be too careful. I knelt down beside the box and listened carefully, wondering if something might be alive inside. I didn't hear anything, so I decided to carefully lift the lid. At first, I was sure what I saw inside the box wasn't real. The contents had to be the result of a prank or a practical joke. Yet, as I stared down at what was inside the box, I couldn't help feeling it was staring back at me. The eyeball was wet and gelatinous and gooey. It sat on a smooth, fluffy pillow of cotton. The iris was blue and the white of the eye was streaked with red. A gift card, like the kind usually attached to bouquets of flowers, sat inside. It read, "To Knox Carter, the new owner of 84 Ramsey Street. From the Court of Moloch. We're watching you." Immediately, I recoiled from the box's contents and took a step back. I wasn't an expert on biology by any stretch of the imagination, but at a glance, the eyeball looked human. Surely that couldn't be the case, could it? If so, whose eye was it, and why had it been presented to me? The eye's owner was a mystery, but it was clear that this was a message. Someone was trying to scare me, but why? My mind kept returning to the list of rules that I had uncovered hours before. Surely those weren't real. And yet, at least some of what had been painted behind the wall of my bedroom seemed accurate enough. Assume you are always being watched. Check. Someone was definitely watching me. I had received an eyeball, which, as far as threats go, was pretty on the nose. I'd also received a note telling me I was being watched. So far, the rules seemed to be 100% accurate. They will try to kill you. That hadn't happened yet, but someone had broken into my house to leave a sinister warning for me. Was it a stretch to think that this rule might be true as well? I decided I wasn't going to give the intruder the satisfaction of getting into my head. After carefully putting the lid back on the box, I sat it beside my bed. Then I barricaded the door with some scrap lumber I'd torn out during the previous day's demolition. Surveying my work, I was convinced that no one could come into this room without a lot of effort and noise. Satisfied that I was safe for the remainder of the night, I laid back down and tried to get to sleep. My head was full of questions, and it took me a while to drift off again. When I finally did, I rejoined the dream I had been having earlier. I killed the poor girl I'd been chasing. Only, in this version, I didn't have a knife anymore. In this revised version of the dream, I killed her with a claw hammer. Chalk it up to the subconscious, self-correcting based on reality. The dream was strange enough to be sure, and I was more than a little confused when I woke up from it. It was what the woman in my dream said right before I delivered the killing blow that caused my eyelids to fly open and my heart to race. "Bored? Check the wall again. There's something you missed, something besides the rules." I sat upright in my bed and threw on the same clothes I'd taken off. Before my mind chose to discard the words, before my memory grew hazy, I wrote it all down quickly in a notebook. Although I was about to follow the instructions I had received in a dream, I didn't think it was the least bit strange. The subconscious has a way of telling the truth when the waking mind refuses to acknowledge the facts. It was easy enough to remove the painter's tarp and uncover those rules again along with the large spray-painted eye. Everything was just as I had left it a few hours earlier. Yet, try as I might, I didn't see anything else. There wasn't anything written on the wall below the rules. There wasn't really anything else there at all except the studs that had been used to frame the house and the drywall on the back side of the wall. Maybe my dream victim's instructions had been faulty. I knew what she'd said. Those were her exact words. Of that I was certain. I spoke the words I'd written down, and something occurred to me as I said them. "Bored," she said in those moments right before I bludgeoned her to death with that hammer. Maybe that was the right sound, but the wrong interpretation. Had she meant bored, as in B-O-A-R-D, instead? This time, with a different focus, it only took me a couple minutes to find what I was looking for. The 2x4 stud was loose and easy enough to remove. There was nothing in the space behind the board. After turning the board over, though, I saw two sets of numbers. I'd done enough construction to know the builders scribble notes all over the materials they use to build a house. Those notes are usually written with a carpenter's pencil and usually detail things in units of feet and inches. Sometimes the scribbles were crude drawings of the project at hand or on-site modifications that were necessary to implement because of initial calculations that were faulty. As far as I knew, most builders didn't ever make calculations that contained two numbers followed by a decimal and four additional numbers. This was a format that I wasn't familiar with. However, there were two different numbers like this on the back of the lumber. Was this what my dream victim had been trying to get me to look at? I dismissed the idea as quickly as it entered my mind. There was no way my subconscious could have directed me to look at something I had no way of knowing was even there. Maybe I'd stumbled onto the truth by misinterpreting the message. Maybe the original word had been B-O-R-E-D and not B-O-A-R-D, and I had just discovered this by chance. To consider anything else would be to go a little further down the road that led to illogical conclusions and flights of fancy, best reserved for the characters in my novels. I guess the how of it all didn't really matter at this point. All that mattered were the two numbers scrawled in pencil in the back of the framing stud. I took a picture of the numbers with my smartphone just in case something happened. I knew my phone would automatically back up everything to the cloud, so those numbers would be safe. Even if something physically happened that rendered my phone inoperable, there would be a way to retrieve those numbers. I took a few more pictures of the wall and the scene I had uncovered, just in case. At that point, I felt drained. Drained from the day of moving in, drained from the simple task of installing a mailbox, drained from meeting one of my neighbors, drained from finding a crazy set of rules behind the wall of my bedroom, drained from having an intruder break into my house, leave an eyeball at my door, and vanish into thin air, drained from discovering yet another mystery I would have to unravel at some point. This time, I didn't even bother undressing in case something happened during the night. I simply kicked off my shoes and crawled into bed, fully clothed. That was the last thing I remembered before morning. The end of this night seems like a good stopping place for now. I'll record more later and help you see where the story goes from here. But before we go, I need to make good on a promise. At the end of the last recording, I promised to reveal another of my secrets. I've mentioned my stay in Saturn Hills a couple of times throughout these recordings, but I haven't really explained what Saturn Hills is. It's an asylum for psychiatric patients. I lived there for nearly 2 years. I would prefer not to talk more about that now, because it conjures up a whole lot of painful memories that I would prefer not to think about. Maybe in a future recording I'll tell you more about it. For now, let's just stick with the fact that I've made good on my promise and told you something I don't tell most people. You now know another of my secrets. Oh, and in case you're wondering, we aren't done talking about my house and Warwick Court. Not by a long shot. There are still more secrets to discuss, just not tonight. Until next time, this is Knox Carter for the Warwick Recordings.
The Warwick Recordings are presented by the Deadbolt Mystery Society. Written by Jason Brannan. Edited by David Alderman. Narrated by Glenn Payne. Sound designed and mixed by Glenn Payne. Executive producers Jason Brannan and Sean Brannan. You can support us by reviewing the Warwick Recordings on the platform where you found us and by sharing this podcast with others. If you enjoyed the Warwick Recordings, we think you would also like our puzzle-solving mystery games, which are found at deadboltmysterysociety.com. Thank you for listening. Until next time.